G'day and welcome back to the Hardball Gets podcast, proudly brought to you by the brand new Mazda BT50. It's the complete package. And in a week that's been dominated by the big story of Willy Rioli, we have a good chat to someone who was in the courtroom about how it all went down and what is coming next. Let's get into it. Well, there's not too many quiet weeks in the AFL season, but this one has been especially loud from a WA point of view and nationally, as the Willy Rioli court drama played out. My name's Chris Robinson, and joining me today to go through it all is the West Australian's reporter on the ground in Darwin, Eliza Riley. Thanks for joining us, Eliza. How are you?
Oh, no worries. A bit hot and bothered up in Darwin, but it's actually a nice change from the Perth sort of cool that start of winter. So, yeah, Darwin's a pretty interesting place, I'll say that much, but yeah.
Is it your first trip up there? Is it the first time you've experienced the top end?
Yeah, it definitely is, and some of the local reporters were describing it to me as it's sort of like the Australian Kuta in Bali, and I think that's a pretty fair summation of what I've experienced so far. Mitchell Street was pumping last night on a Wednesday night, so can't wait to see some more of it before we get home.
Right. How do we find you up there today, Eliza? Have you had a bit of a chance to take a breath today following the sort of hectic nature of covering everything yesterday?
Look, I'd love to say yes, but not really. We were sort of back at the airport this morning, Tiwi Airport, trying to see if Willy was sort of hitting the road and getting back to his family in Tiwi. So hasn't been too many sleep-ins on the trip so far, but hopefully we'll have a bit of downtime tonight and then we head home on Friday morning.
Yeah. Well, talk us through what it was like covering the case yesterday. Obviously a big build-up since the story broke on Monday morning. Take us inside the courtroom. What was it like for you to be there, and what was the atmosphere like as the case was being heard?
It was pretty bizarre, to be honest with you. You know, you sign up to be a sports journalist and suddenly you're in a courtroom and might be looking at my future career sort of covering a bit of court. Absolutely not. That was a complete joke. Keep me in sport, please. But I guess from a journalistic point of view, as you mentioned, huge story. He was on the verge of returning to the Eagles after, you know, nearly 2 years in football abyss and just about there, and now, you know, suddenly his career was in sort of doubt again. So being in that courtroom, it was, you know, quite a sort of interesting vibe and mood within it. It was a very, very drawn out process, mm-hmm. Which was a bit of a shock to me as a sports journo. You know, we got there at 8 a.m. in the morning. The court opened at sort of 8:30. He wasn't due to be heard until 10 a.m. He rocked up at 9:50. Then he had all these delays and other cases being heard, and then his legal counsel were asking for more time because they were waiting on one more character witness, and just dragged out. And finally, we got to after 2 p.m. Up here, and finally Willy got his case heard. So very long day for journalists and Willy alike. You know, he was very distraught on his way in and out of court. But, yeah, the whole mood of the room was quite interesting because, you know, as the judge, as the lawyers, both prosecution and defence commented on, you know, they haven't seen a media pack like that in a while. Mm. So the public interest was obviously huge.
Yeah, definitely would have been something a little bit different for little old Darwin. You sort of touched on it there. And we sort of saw some pictures and images of it as he's sort of walking in and out. What kind of sense of emotion did you get from Willy Rioli yesterday? He's normally a guy who sort of puts his feelings on display. He wears his heart on his sleeve a fair bit. Did you sort of get a feeling of that yesterday?
I thought he was incredibly nervous and scared as we saw him walking into court. So, you know, he approached court on foot about 10 minutes before his case was due to be heard, sort of was trying to, you know, cover his face, sort of had a bit of, you know, just had his arm on his back. His lawyer was trying to counsel him sort of through the whole thing because, you know, it's not pleasant having so many cameras sort of shoved in your face asking you why you're here and what you've done. As we got into the courtroom, obviously all that cameras had to stay outside, but that's when you sort of saw the full extent, I think, of what he was feeling. Just sort of, you know, classic twiddling the thumbs. He was sort of shifting his feet back and forth on the carpet, sort of buckling knees, looking basically down at the ground the whole time, didn't really want to acknowledge anyone else in the courtroom. close to sort of crying at stages, it felt like. So, you know, his lawyer was asking him, are you okay? Are you okay? Just classic symptoms of the sort of distraught person. And, you know, he's done it to himself, obviously, and we have to put that in perspective. But it was hard not to feel empathy for him as well. It's just this one of the more, I guess, heartbreaking scenes is when his family, a big group of his family, came in to sort of support him and sat right behind him, were kissing him on the head and cuddling him from behind, and he just couldn't acknowledge them.
Yeah, sounds like the complete opposite to his on-field life, his professional career as a footballer. You really see someone who looks more at home, more in their place than Rioli on the footy field. Obviously, this is a far environment from there. As far as the reaction to the verdict when that was handed down yesterday, how much of Willie could you see, and what was his sort of immediate emotion when that was handed down?
I think it was a mixture of relief, but he was still pretty sort of embarrassed and humiliated, I feel, at the same time, because obviously, you know, no conviction, he's gotten away with it essentially, but still just the extra attention that came with himself sitting in a courtroom was, you know, something he's probably not experienced too often. So, you know, no, he didn't speak to anyone on his way out. We were told very clearly by the lawyers that he wasn't going to offer any statements, so it was hard to get an exact gauge, I guess, without speaking to him. But, you know, just more, I guess, distraught and distressed, with a bit of a mixture of just humiliation as well.
Yeah. Would you have liked to have seen him talk outside? I'm guessing, or I'm assuming, that probably wasn't his call as to not talk. But would you have liked to have seen him just make a short statement if he wasn't answering questions?
I think at the end of the day, I would have liked to hear from him. And I think it would have been quite a good thing for fans and the West Coast Eagles as well, because, you know, his lawyer was saying he apologises to the Eagles. He's really upset about what he's brought upon the club. But unless you're hearing that from him, you know, you just don't know the extent of that to some respect. So I think it would have almost been a good look. Like you said, no questions, just here's a one or two sentence statement. I'm really sorry. I apologize to this person, this person, this person. And then basically that's all we would have needed for him. And would have left him alone a lot sooner, I think. The TVs and the camos all following up him up the street.
Yeah, I agree with you there. I think a little can sometimes go a long way in that circumstance. As far as the locals and people up there, as you say, it's a bit of a unique set of circumstances for Darwin and for that environment. Did you sort of get a sense from the locals about how they feel about this situation? I imagine there'd be a fair bit of support for him up there.
I mean, you know, being in Darwin, there's a lot of crazy things that happen up here. So a footy star getting caught with a bit of cannabis isn't probably in the top percentile that have happened in Darwin. But, you know, there was a fair bit of intrigue yesterday as we were sort of waiting outside court with all the cameras and the reporters waiting around, you know, a bit of, oh, who's this for? Who's this for? And then we say, oh, Willie Rioli. And it's like, oh, Willie Rioli. It's like as if everyone knows the bloke up here, which they probably do. So, I mean, it's pretty similar to Perth in that Darwin obviously loves their footy, big footy town. The St. Mary's Football Club, where all the Riolis have gone through, is pretty close by. But, you know, a bit of a quirky and funny moment right at the end there as well. Story on our website at the moment, but a fan actually ran up to Willie Rioli once he was halfway down the street and asked for a bit of a photo. And Willie, you know, obliged, wrapped his arm around him, and this fan skipped off with the biggest smile on his face. And that just probably speaks to the sort of respect both Willie and his family have in this town.
Yeah, we did see that. How did that sort of come about? How long after he sort of left the court and left the press pack, if you will, behind, did that sort of moment come about?
It was probably within 2-3 minutes. So he sort of walked halfway up the street and then was looking to cross the road, and kid you not, the longest ever little red man stop sign, which prevented him from crossing the road. I reckon we're sitting there for about a minute and a half. It was quite comical.
Can get very busy, those Darwin streets.
Yeah, I think we saw four cars go through time, but he was desperate just to cross the street but didn't want to get done for jaywalking right outside court.
Yes.
So anyway, crossed to the other side of the street. That's where everyone sort of backed off a little bit, and then they turned down sort of an alleyway behind some of the lawyers' offices, and we sort of saw this man run past us and say, "Oh, is that Willie? Is that Willie?" And we said, "Yep, that way, mate. Off you go." And then so he turns the corner, runs after them and goes straight up to the lawyer, probably not realising who he was, and says, "Oh, can you take a photo of me and Willie?" And they all thought it was pretty funny. The lawyers did. And, you know, Willie, like, to be fair, he hasn't had the best day, but he still was happy to get a bit of a photo with a fan and pose up. So I think that sort of speaks to the sort of guy he is, or though he has committed a crime and pleaded guilty to it, not had the best day, he was still sort of willing to put himself out there for a fan.
Yeah, definitely a credit to the man. We know that that West Coast, the next step in all of this now is West Coast deciding his fate, and if there is if there are repercussions for what he's done, including potentially staying on the list or leaving the list. We know that the board's going to ultimately rule on that. I'd suggest they'll have a fair bit of input from the AFL with regard to that. Certainly wouldn't be expecting it today or tomorrow, and Trevor Nisbet sort of said as much. They'll certainly take their time with the decision. If you were to read the tea leaves and suggest it's more likely that he'll remain or be stood down, where would you sort of be leaning at this point, Eliza?
I think the gut feel at the moment is that he stays, whether that changes at some point in the future. But I guess the first sort of benchmark West Coast would hit is the mid-season draft. And if they wanted to make a list change by then, they only have, I think it's 17 days as we speak today.
Yep.
So to make a change that soon and decide his future by that point, I think is a bit of a bridge too far, where the West Coast have been scoping out local talent. They would know who they'd want to bring onto the list. They probably can't look at their waffle team because they're not going too well. But
right.
Just I think that's the first. If you were going to tick that box, you wouldn't tick it if you were West Coast. Just too little time to sort of sort something out there. But I guess from a West Coast point of view, he is very much down to the last straw, and you've gone through the hail bale in front of you, and you've gone through the one next to that and the one next to that. It is literally the last straw for Willie Rioli. Yeah. And I think for him to be welcomed back at West Coast, he'll have to tick a number of boxes to make that happen, whether that's a bit of rehab, bit of counselling. I think they're going to impose some pretty strict club sanctions on him just to get him on the straight and narrow.
There's obviously a mental health consideration here. The club can still obviously support him without him being on the list, but I think that's certainly a factor that comes into play. I tend to agree with you. My thought is that it's more unlikely than likely that he plays this year now, but I think it's probably more likely than unlikely that he gets retained. I feel like the playing group is going to have a significant say in this. I mean, it's probably unlikely, but if they resolve as a collective that he's lost their trust, you'd imagine then that goes a long way in helping the board decide, would you not?
Oh, definitely. I mean, ultimately, they're the ones kicking the ball to him on the field. So if they've lost his trust, then what's really the point keeping him on the list? But yeah, as we've spoken about earlier, the board will ultimately have that final say. But I guess from a playing group perspective, it's going to be a matter of, you know, is this a good look for us? Because ultimately, his actions sort of reflect on that playing group. And no matter, you know, how good the rest of that playing group are and ticking all the right boxes, doing all the right things, you know, one little sort of accident or incident like this can rub that all away. So I think the West Coast players, it sounds like there was a bit of disillusionment, bit of frustration with Willie's latest indiscretion. But, you know, I get the feel that the West Coast playing group might be pretty forgiving, and sort of that those feelings might be replaced by a bit of empathy pretty soon. But whether that's the majority of them, I think you'd have to have the entire group on board, to be honest, to you know, have that trust in Willie going forward.
Yeah. I see it as sort of a real knife's edge kind of balancing act between, if you want to sort of strip it down to the basics, the two sort of main aspects to footy club, one of which is win games, win flags, achieve on-field and financial success. And then the other aspect is sort of having a culture of being a great club, great people, great role models, that kind of thing. You ideally strive to have both, of course, but I feel like the first one still weighs ever so slightly higher. And I guess what I mean by that is if you look at Richmond's year last year, they had a lot of off-field controversy with the hub, things going with players' partners, all the rest of it, and then still wound up winning the flag at the end of the season. And I think if you ask any AFL club, take a club that was, you know, a middling team or a lower team last year, had no sort of off-field controversy, whether they'd swap with Richmond and have the controversy and still win the flag, I think most, if not all, would say, yeah, we'll do that swap. So it's a real balancing act between what's going to be best for you on the field and then also being mindful of the culture and the look and what it all means. Do you sort of agree with that?
Oh, 100%. And we've seen this pattern at the Eagles in the past. Obviously, that sort of 90s, I think Duff called it in his column the other day.
Yeah.
that sort of, you know, 04 to 07 sort of period where we saw everything fall apart pretty quickly. And, you know, that was, I guess, at the extreme end of the off-field culture issue and, you know, had big ramifications for a number of years after that, whereas Willie is one player, couple of incidents that he needs to remedy, obviously. But I think West Coast culture, you sort of get the outside read that it is very strong internally, and they have been able to overcome quite a bit in the last few years, whether it's Andrew Gaff's punch on Andrew Brayshaw on the Derby, a couple instances like that. It seems to not haunt them for too long, I guess, these days. So, you know, I think it's just a matter of getting Willie in that right environment. And as long as nobody else on the list is going and making these mistakes, then I think Willie is someone they'll be able to iron out pretty quickly and get back on the straight and narrow without sacrificing too much off-field culture.
Yeah, and I think as well, it's obviously not at the forefront of their mind. It's not a primary concern, but it's a not insignificant factor of, if Willie Rioli isn't on the West Coast list next year, there's every single chance that he's on one of the other 17 AFL lists. And we know the fact about 7 of the past 8 premiership sides having a Rioli in that 22 on grand final day. If you're West Coast, you wouldn't necessarily want to be coming up against Willie Rioli in a big final, or potentially two Riolis in the case of if he were to go to Richmond. I feel like that probably also is somewhere of a consideration down the line.
Oh, 100%. And with someone like Willie, I feel like we've still barely scraped the surface of what he's actually able to do on field.
Because
his first few years at West Coast, obviously plagued by a bit of hamstring injuries and just adapting to that AFL level of training and playing. And then we saw a pretty good level of him in 2018, obviously winning the premiership. But I think he even took a step further in 2019. His season was remarkable when it just was completely forgotten when he was banished from the club on the eve of the semi-final. But, you know, if he has been training the house down, as everyone has suggested, up in the Tiwi Islands, and he is fit and ready to resume training, it doesn't seem like it's going to take that long to get him back up to match standard with the sort of skills we know he already possesses. So I dare say West Coast, like you mentioned, wouldn't like to see his name on the team sheet coming up against them.
Definitely. Do you think, as far as the immediate impact for West Coast on field goes, I mean, it's a bit of a different set of circumstances to the last time that a Rioli bombshell hit. So that was in that 2019 final series. I think it was 2 days before their final against the Cats in Melbourne, just as they touched down in Melbourne. They got jumped by Geelong in that semi-final and never really recovered. This time the news sort of hits the best part of a week before their home game with Adelaide on Sunday, with that news breaking on Monday morning. Do you sort of expect any sort of on-field impact as far as West Coast goes this weekend in the wake of this week's developments?
I honestly don't expect anything on field from the team. I think, you know, Willie's been away from the club for so long now that he's almost, I guess, a separate entity at this point, although he's still on the list. They've probably forgotten what it's like to kick a ball to him at training or to play alongside him. So I think the group, although that sounds like there's been a bit of frustration and bewilderment, I think they'll, you know, course correct pretty quickly, and, you know, don't think it will sort of impact them too much, because, you know, that Geelong final, there was one, it was a final, it was a high pressure situation already, and two, like you mentioned, it happened right on the eve of it. It was such a shock to everyone within the whole team, and especially to be sort of wheeled out and banished back home, whereas this news has come, you know, a bit further away. It's up in Darwin, it's a 3.5 hour plane ride away. I think the playing group obviously feel for him and are upset about his actions, but I don't think it will translate to anything on field.
Yeah, it's it's going to be very interesting to see just how they go. If he doesn't come back, if he doesn't have the opportunity to make it back this season, if the club or the league impose that sort of penalty, and we're dealing in hypotheticals here, but if he doesn't have that carrot to come back, it'll be really interesting to see how that affects not only him, but the club as well. I feel like there's sort of been that sense in the back of the mind that for West Coast, if you can just be somewhere there come the end of the season, what an X factor to potentially be able to bring in for round 23 or your first final or your second final if you make it that far. I feel like that's always been sort of just looming there in the early part of the season, thinking, hey, if we can just get somewhere close, this guy might be able to take us over the edge. So it'd be really interesting to see what happens if that gets taken away with any sort of ruling in the coming days or weeks. As far as the Eagles go on the field, Eliza, did you take much out of Sunday's game against Hawthorn? They obviously had to win it. They did it. They took care of business. They potentially get their Twin Towers in defence back this week in Tom Barris and also Jeremy McGovern. How did you sort of see them in terms of getting a second straight win, and what if anything did you take out of that Hawthorn game?
Look, I don't think there's a whole lot to take out of it, to be completely honest. I think it was just tick the box, as you said, get the 4 points, get back home without any sort of extra injuries. They almost sort of achieved that until Big JK sort of went down with the calf in the closing stages there. So hopefully he gets up for this week. But I just think with the sort of how much they're being depth tested at the moment, they had to do was get the 4 points against Hawthorn, who were a pretty average side as it is. You know, you never really want to be hitting your straps at this stage of the year. So for West Coast, it was just, you know, getting on top early, silencing that very minuscule Hawthorn home crowd at the MCG. I think it was only 10,000 there. And then getting home on the plane and preparing for Adelaide this week. So I think this sort of run of, I mean, easy in quotation mark oppositions is benefiting West Coast with all the injuries they do have at the moment.
Absolutely, and it gets a little bit easier for West Coast, literally just as we're starting this podcast, seeing on Twitter that Taylor Walker won't make the trip west. He's out for Adelaide. So that is a massive out for the Crows. I think they're managing him ahead of Sunday's game. So we'll wait and see what happens at training today and what kind of approach West Coast take with regard to risking or playing one of those two key defenders. I mean, would you be more tempted, Eliza, if Barris or McGovern are only at, you know, 95% or what have you, would you be more tempted to rest one of them now or to make sure one of them's extra right, knowing that Taylor Walker's not making the trip?
Oh, 100%. Sit them both out. Put Big O down back again. I have so much trust in the Big O. I am a number one ticket holder of the Big O fan club. So he can do everything, that man. But obviously we've got the issue as well of JK's not going to play this weekend as well. So that's to keep at the back of the mind. But if either Tom Barras or Jeremy McGovern are not 100%, I wouldn't be playing them, especially considering Taylor's out as well.
Yeah, it'd be interesting to see what kind of approach they take to that, particularly with, as I say, with the Crow sort of telegraphing that move a few days in advance. Eliza, before we let you get out of here, we've got a little segment that we'll race through that we like to call Over Under.
Over? Nah. Under.
And I'll throw one number at you, which is 1.5. And the number this week is Matt Taberner's goal tally against Essendon. So 1.5, the context of this is Taberner's had 9 straight games. He's looking to make it 10, where he's kicked multiple goals in a game, which is not unimpressive feat these days, considering the lower scoring nature of games. Fremantle obviously being up and down. He's been one of their real shining lights, real beacon of consistency. Does he make it 10 straight games with multiple goals against Essendon? 1.5, you got over or under?
Lock it in. That's 10 straight. He's going to do it. And he's going to stamp himself as Fremantle's best forward. He's not quite the privilege from back in the day, but he's doing pretty well for himself. So, no, definitely back tabs in for multiple goals.
Yeah, I think you might be right. Just looking at Essendon's past four games, they've given up triple figure scores in three of them. So not the most shut down defensive team going around. That's just about the toughest tip of the weekend, Essendon Freo in Melbourne. Obviously, Fremantle, we know they've spent a bit of time on the road now. They'll duck down from their Gold Coast base to make that trip. How much of a chance do you give Freo here if you're tipping right now? Which way are you sort of leaning with that one?
I actually give them a massive chance down at Marvel Stadium. I guess, you know, we haven't seen the best of Fremantle on the road this season, but they obviously had that good win against Adelaide at Adelaide Oval a few weeks back and fell again once they came up against Brisbane at the Gabba. But I just think that, you know, Essendon, you know, probably aren't the strongest team on paper. Neither are Fremantle at the moment, I must say, with the injuries they've also got. But I do give Fremantle quite a big chance. I don't know if I'd go as far as saying they're a lock to win it, but I think it's going to be a bit closer than people probably think.
Yeah, I think Adam Chera, if he can get up as a return, I think he's a bit of an under-the-radar potential return for Fremantle. They've really missed him through their past two games, which have been those fairly comprehensive losses in the Derby and then also against Brisbane, even though they fought back well at the end. But if you're chucking Chera back in that midfield, it really just gives them that depth through there. And I think that's a part of the ground that Essendon, Zach Merritt aside, who's having a terrific season, and a bit of Andy McGrath as well, they don't really have that depth going through there. So that's potentially one area that Freo can get on top of. Looking at the other games, as far as hardest tips of the week, Richmond GWS is a real head scratcher here. Normally you wouldn't have to think too hard about it and you'd be backing Richmond in, and still somewhat fresh in the memory is the grand final shellacking from 2019. But you look at the names that Richmond are missing in that midfield: Cochin, Prestia, Edwards, Lambert, and now Shea Bolton as well. They've literally lost their entire first choice midfield. Obviously, Dustin Martin likes to float through there as well as going forward. Do you have big concerns about the Tigers, and do you still see them as favourites against the Giants here?
I mean, you have to based on those names you have out, but I guess the other factor is how they respond to yet another off-field sort of crisis.
Yes.
An incident, and we know that based on last year, they actually respond to those pretty well and want to sort of put them to bed after a hard week in the media. So I'm still giving Richmond a bit of a shot here. They always just seem to find a way. I don't really know how. I can't explain it. Frustrates the hell out of me being with my uncle being a Tigers supporter.
Okay,
but
right.
I guess I still give, Richmond, I'm probably still going to tip just because it's in Marvel Stadium, I guess. But yet again, I don't know why you're asking me. I've absolutely flunked the tipping the past
That's
few weeks.
That's true. I just thought about that. Yeah, I forgot who I was talking to there for a second.
Can we just erase that segment, Josh? I've gone from fourth to, I think, 22nd in 3 weeks. So maybe the viewers just totally ignore that segment.
So for anyone who's listening to Eliza, who is fast slipping down the tipping order in the West Australians pre-game lift out, maybe just do the opposite of what she says and take the Giants there. Look, Eliza, we'll let you get out of here. We know you've still got heaps to do up there in Darwin, plenty of news to chase. Really appreciate you taking the time out to have a chat to us about Willy Rioli and all things footy today. Best of luck with the rest of it up there, and have a safe trip back to Perth.
No worries. Thanks for having us.
No worries. And thanks to our listeners, and thanks also to our good friends at Mazda and the Mazda BT50. It is the complete package. Enjoy your weekend of footy. Don't miss Xavier Ellis and the 2-Minute Warning crew on Monday, and we'll chat to you next week.